So thank you all for being here. If you want to move up, we promise not to pass the hat for a collection. And we would love to have you up here really so you can get lots of good eye contact. That always helps all of us. Thank you very much. My presentation is on oral health literacy, an overview and update. And as all presenters have to do, we say we have no disclosures. I do have a disclosure, and that is that I'm very pro health literacy. Outside of that, I have none. So I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch about oral health literacy. First of all, I want to explain to you that my first introduction to health literacy was in 1995. I was a latecomer. Dentistry was very, very late getting on board with this concept. And I saw a publication put out by the Journal of the American School of Health, and they, along with the American Cancer Society, actually developed and had in their objectives for health literacy. Nothing to do with oral health, nothing to do with any real content per se, but they were in fact interested in increasing health literacy. That was my first introduction of those terms, and it dawned on me that, my goodness, I've been doing this, you know, for a long, long time, and but I'd never connected it to that. At that time, I was working at NIH in the Dental Institute, and I was also the NIH rep for the oral health section of Healthy People 2010. So, you know, we worked on that in 1998, 1999. It was published in 2000. And because this was Healthy People 2010 was a major impetus, I believe, I'm biased as a former Fed, to increasing the concept of health literacy by devoting a chapter to health communication. And most of you remember this and know that at the same time we had a chapter always in oral health. They'd been in there since 79. And it included, for the very first time in print, the definition of oral health literacy. So you can see, because if you look and if you know the history of health literacy in this country, that it goes back much further than that. We were just slow jumping on the train, but we're on it full tilt now. And so oral health literacy defined is exactly the same one that was devised by Ruth Parker and colleagues, and which was also used in Healthy People 2010. But this was our definition that we used in the oral health chapter. And the only difference here is that it had the word oral in front of the word health. Now, there are many, many different people who think that this has a very limited perspective, that maybe it's focused too much on the individual, but in the broader scope of things, and when we look at what it really means is that we're talking about all individuals, we're talking about providers, we're talking about patients, we're talking about policymakers, and we're talking about health literate health facilities. There are other definitions that I like better, but that's not my assignment for today. So Oral Health in America was the first and so far only report from the Surgeon General. That was actually produced also in the year 2000. So they sort of came together. And what they, well, I'm not sure, in fact, I've tried to search it, but you can't do that anymore, but the term health literacy or oral health literacy was never actually mentioned in this document, but what was mentioned in this document is the background on page 176, 177, you will find that it gives the backdrop for the importance of oral health literacy in that it illustrated very, very well what we knew based on surveys of providers, surveys of the public. It illustrated the lack of oral health literacy by what the public and healthcare providers knew and understood at the time with regard to the practice and preventing or controlling dental caries, gingivitis, and gingivitis, gum disease, plain language, or oral cancers, mouth cancers. So while it didn't really mention the word health literacy? The background was there. I wasn't strong enough yet to get that term in, but you will see that the National Call to Action to Promote Oral Health, which was then produced in 2003, also with the leadership of the then Surgeon General, it is laced with oral health literacy actions. And if you're ever interested in working in oral health, this still is a great guide for using it and thinking about studies that need to be done, interventions that need to be done, but this definitely was laced with the terms oral health literacy. The National Call to Action to Promote Oral Health actually was to change perceptions of oral health. This is part of the call to action, and to enhance oral health literacy specifically, develop messages that are culturally sensitive and linguistically competent, increase understanding of how the relationship between oral health and general health, promote interdisciplinary training of medical and dental students and the graduates. So these were all of the things that came out in 2003. Shortly after the call to action was published, everybody knows anything about health literacy, you recognize this publication. Health Literacy, A Prescription to End Confusion, came out in 2004. Literacy and Health Outcomes from the AHRQ came out in the same year. Remember that that was the first time that there had been an evidence-based review on health literacy. There was absolutely nothing on dental related to oral health in that particular publication because there hadn't been any research at that time. NIH issued a program announcement for research on health literacy in 2004. We knew that the IOM was coming out with the health literacy book, and so we knew we had, and we knew that the evidence-based review from AHRQ was also coming out. So we then knew that NIH had to get their, you know what, together and announce for research on health literacy. It is still in effect, that program announcement, but my understanding is that it will probably stop at the end of the current one now, unless something else occurs. And that might be a topic for discussion of people who are interested in health literacy. So almost all of the NIH institutes, including the one I was in, the Dental Institute, signed on to that announcement, and it's why, for the large main part, why there now is a great deal of studies out, number of studies published, more in the works, on oral health literacy and its impact on health outcomes. So, well, I already said this, so we can skip over that. But the first workshop on oral health literacy in 2004 was at the NIDCR, and it was called The Invisible Barrier, Literacy and Its Relationship with Oral Health. We had many, many dental public health researchers as well as health literacy. Rima Rudd was there, and many, many others that we all now work with. But what we basically did, and it's still a good guide for other research that needs to be done, and it's published in the Journal of Public Health Dentistry, laid out a plan of research that still needs attention in case any of you are interested. At the same time, other people, especially Lee Rozier and colleagues at UNC, began working on the development of instruments to measure oral health literacy. And they came up with some of the same measurement tools that we now have in medicine and can be used. Remember, most tools that are used to measure health literacy are simply measuring functional literacy, being able to read certain kinds of things, and many of us question whether or not that really is the route to go. But since 2001, health literacy has been included in the annual sessions of every major dental organization and government-sponsored meeting throughout the country and out of the country. So it's come a long way, baby, as they say. The American Dental Association established the National Oral Health Literacy Advisory Committee in 2007. Several of us in the room are part of that effort and continue to work a lot. They're very supportive. The ADA is very supportive of health literacy. We created a plan of action, conducted surveys among dentists and dental hygienists regarding what communication skills that they use, and we actually used Joanne's survey when she was at the AMA that they developed, and to use that with dentists. Come to find out that not too many dentists or dental hygienists actually use recommended communication skills. Since that time, we have also developed many other things in the state of Maryland, and UNC has done a lot of work in oral health literacy. Also remember that after the IOM came out with their first report, that they then created a roundtable on that. These roundtables are not inexpensive. It costs minimum of $50,000 to be a member on it. And until 2 years ago, there was never any dental representation on that. But eventually, 2 years ago, the California Dental Association did pony up the money to become a member. We're now represented from a dentist from California, and very soon now, I think starting this year or maybe early next year, that the ADA will actually be the member to organize. So at least we have some dental representation on that. Now, why is that important? It's very, very important because all of the roundtable members, when we actually had a roundtable on oral health literacy, they were, for the most part, blown away in terms of how much is needed in oral health literacy, how much is really truly needed. So, and this is the roundtable on oral health literacy that was published in 2013. And I urge you to take a look at it if you are interested in it. So, why is it important? Why is it important to specify on oral health literacy? For the most part, and all too often, oral health is not considered an integral part of overall health. All too frequently, it is dressed in silos, that the head is never connected to the body, and yet there's huge impact of the mouth on the rest of the body. For example, how many of you know that if you are diabetic and if you have gum disease, periodontal disease, that you will have a very difficult time controlling your A1Cs if you don't take care of this infection? Think about it. I want everybody to put their hands right up here. Everything else you're doing, up here, okay? That's a big space, big space. Okay, take it, put it down on your leg, how big that space is. How big is that space? If you had an infection that big on your arm or your leg, you'd go screaming to the ER, right? It's in the mouth, and you never think about it. It's out of sight, out of mind. We have to change that, and this is part of what oral health literacy is all about. Unfortunately, medical students, dental students are never, ever trained together, very, very few places, but we've got to get that together. There's another very important area, and that is when we're dealing with pregnant women, with gravid women who are low income. Frequently, they have very poor oral hygiene, very bad dental disease that can not only has potential to impact their, they may be preterm associated, not causal, with low birth weight and preterm delivery. Further, if their mouth is full of cavities, there's a 100% chance that she's going to pass that bacteria to her infant, who's going to end up having early childhood tooth decay, ECC, and that baby will ultimately end up being put under general anesthesia to have those teeth taken care of. So, and it's disgusting because we know how to prevent this disease with the appropriate use of fluorides and with the appropriate use of decreasing sugary drinks and food products. But this is why it's important. It's because all too often that the mouth and the head is sitting way over here. So oral health literacy is all about trying to get it back on here because it has a huge impact on our health. So, and because oral diseases are chronic and they're expensive and unnecessary because we have preventive procedures. Almost all of the oral diseases, whether it's oral cancers, whether it is gum diseases, periodontitis, tooth decay, cavities, dental caries, it's all the same thing, that indeed those can be prevented. We have known for decades how to prevent cavities, and yet there are still children, tons of children and adults who experience this disease. So measuring health literacy is, as I said earlier, measured as functional literacy, people's ability to apply reading skills to everyday tasks. Most of us in the room recognize that, but what you need to know is that they may not be testing what we're really looking for. Because the current assessments simply do not differentiate between reading ability, lack of familiarity with language and materials, cultural differences in approaches to health. But what has been done that I alluded to earlier is that the RELD 99 and RELD 30, you'll recognize these, and the test of functional health literacy and dentistry have been developed and they are available to use. There are also other ones. Most of us aren't too excited about using all of these different measurements, but they are available and you can track them down. So, what is our problem? A low level of oral health literacy is associated with low level of knowledge about oral health, especially about preventing tooth decay. There are fewer dental visits, that's national data, increased severity of dental caries, higher rates of failed appointments, and lower oral health related quality of life. This is associations, not causal, but these also come almost with the territory of low levels of education. We work in the state where I work mainly with the Medicaid or no insurance folks, so we deal with this every single day. A case study is that we developed prevention and early detection of caries, a statewide basis needs assessment. And the reason we did that is because in 2007, a 12-year-old boy died from tooth decay. That was in 2007. Now, allegedly, the problem was he couldn't find a dentist. But the causes of the causes were that he had no access, his mom didn't use, they didn't know that, in fact, if there were preventive procedures then, there was no reason for this child to die. None. And he's not the only one that has died from this disease. But at that time, the governor said, never again will a child die from tooth decay in our state. So in that, a group of us, and it's important to point out that we do know how to prevent and control this disease. Appropriate use of fluorides, you can see my shirt, get it from the tap. Fluoride prevents tooth decay, and it works for all of us. All of you who have your own teeth, you should be drinking fluoridated tap water if it's available to you. It is in this city, and not using bottled water. Also, we want them to use appropriate use of fluoride toothpaste. Use Pitt and Fisher sealants when the child is old enough with their first permanent back teeth. Reduction of sweets and periodic use of dental care. Unfortunately, all too often, everybody thinks that in order to have good oral health, that it's go to the dentist and brush and floss your teeth. That isn't really going to do it. It's what we do, and it's what we teach our folks to do, especially low income. I always like to remind all of us that, you know, moms are so important. Our moms are first educator. Moms are first physician. Moms are first dentist. They have a huge role in this, and this is why we need to really work with our moms. So conducting a need assessment we wanted to determine local and state needs, determine what the public knows and does regarding caries prevention, determine perceptions of their providers' communication skills, and determine what other publics like Head Start, WIC, and know and do and regarding caries prevention and early detection. At the same time, because we knew that healthcare providers also need to be thought about, that we wanted to know what they know and do. So what we actually did was to, and we wanted to know what communication skills they were using. And we wanted to conduct environmental scans of community-based dental clinics throughout the state. So why determine knowledge and understanding? Because low health literacy is associated with deficits in health knowledge and understanding in support of decision making. We want people to make decisions about their own oral health. We want healthcare providers to make decisions to use fluoride appropriately, to use Pitt and Fisher sealants appropriately. So what we did was to mail surveys to four provider groups: physicians, dentists, nurse practitioners, and dental hygienists. So this survey, as I said earlier, had two sections. What do they know and do about preventing tooth decay? And what did they do and use about recommended communication techniques? We also did a similar survey with WIC and Head Start personnel, and we did a phone survey of adults 18 years of age and older who had a child in the home, 6 years of age and younger. So we did focus groups of all of these groups with the low-income adults. Four were in English, two were in Spanish. So we pretty much covered the waterfront with mixed methods. General public in the state of Maryland does not understand how to prevent caries, does not know what fluoride is or what it does, and you have to understand, in my state, we have had community water fluoridation for decades, and almost 98% of essential water supplies are fluoridated. Almost 98% are fluoridated. Diamante Driver did not have to die. But he didn't have access to these things. And general public does not know what sealants are, what they're used for. Neither adults nor children drink tap water, despite most of it is optimally fluoridated. And this is especially true among low income. So healthcare providers, many, including dentists and dental hygienists, do not have the best understanding about how to prevent tooth decay. It's not a major focus in dental schools. Most do not provide dental sealants, and most healthcare providers do not use recommended communication techniques. Some recommend not drinking fluoridated tap water. Some dentists recommend do not drink tap water. And told in focus groups, I was behind the sliding, you know, the one-way glass, and said, I never, ever recommend that my patients drink fluoridated water. I don't drink fluoridated water. Well, I knew he was lying because I've had lunch with him and saw him that he drank, you know, tap water of the water that was served to us. But they're conflicted and don't have correct information, some of them. So we always have to educate about these kinds of things. So based on the surveys and focus groups, we had a really good understanding of what we thought we needed to do. Decided that what we needed to do was to develop an environmental scan. If we used an environmental scan that was based on HRQs, Universal Precautions Toolkit, how many of you are familiar with the toolkit? Dynamite toolkit to work with. It has domains important for promoting health literacy: spoken, written, self-management, and empowerment, and supportive systems. So what we did was, our purpose in conducting these scans, we did it, of course, only with those who were said yes, they agreed to doing this. So 26 of the 34 community-based dental clinics actually said yes and agreed to this. And what we found was that they simply do not have good educational materials about preventing dental caries. And so what we need to do in oral health literacy, I believe, is continue to increase oral health literacy. We need to train providers in health literacy principles and practices and include health literacy in the curricula for dentists and dental hygienists. And the takeaway message is that efforts to improve quality, reduce costs, and reduce health disparities cannot succeed without simultaneously increasing the health literacy of the public healthcare providers, health facilities, and policymakers. And thank you very much.
That's an amazing research, and I wonder, does anybody want to comment or have some questions for Alice before she sits down?
Out loud, outside voice.
Out of curiosity, when the dentists are behind the curve saying things like, I never tell people to drink tap water with fluoride, I'm trying to figure out what feels good about saying, what's the rationale behind that logic? Did anybody ask them why they would do that?
Yes, just because he didn't think it was necessary, because he thought that they should go to the dentist to get fluoride treatments. I mean, it's a great question, and I didn't really follow through on that because I know it's running behind, but that was the rationale. So remember, dentistry, like almost every other industry, is everybody wants to make money. Fluoridation works, you guys. Fluorides work. It does prevent tooth decay. So if you can make money and get Medicaid payments for applying fluoride treatments, then, you know, that's the way, you know, some want to go. I think this guy, there were actually two of them, out of the folks groups that we did with them, that had this opinion. But I can tell you, we just had a session on community water fluoridation, and there was an environmentalist in there whose wife is a dentist. And he told everybody in this, you know, stuffed room that his wife, a dentist, really didn't believe in community water fluoridation either.